Yes, folks, it's the Rolling Stones. Hello and welcome to the Talking News for St Albans, Harpenden and the surrounding area. I'm Bill and this is the Red Saturn programme for Saturday, October 25th, 2025. I do hope you're all well. Last month I featured songs by the Beatles, so I thought it was only right to bring in their great rivals back in the 60s, the Rolling Stones.
I saw her today at the reception. A glass of wine in her hand.
This is You Can't Always Get What You Want from the Rolling Stones' Let It Bleed album from 1969. It shows a willingness to extend the idea of rock music into uncharted areas, much as the Beatles did. I'll play it in full at the end of the programme. If you have a favourite song or piece you'd like to hear on the programme, do send your request in the red pack with the USB drive when you return it, and I'll do my best to track it down and play it.
But if you try sometimes, well, you might find you get what you need. Yeah.
This week, as always, we start off with the news stories from the Hearts Advertiser and St Albans Times. This will be followed by our selection of radio listings and then the audio-described TV listings. 10 Today is up next, our series of gentle exercise routines to help keep you moving at home. Then we'll have another song from the Rolling Stones, Country Honk, which is a countrified reversion of their big hit Honky Tonk Woman. Will be followed by our regular Events This Week in History feature, and then some famous birthdays. Another track from the Stones will lead into the sounds of nature, this week with Clive Davis in Mongolia. Then from the Hearts Life archive, we'll hear about the monks of St Albans. We start with the news, and our readers this week are Lucy, Hilary, Caroline, Penny, and Rob, and Dan.
Hello, this is Lucy, and it's great to be with you again today. And we're going to kick off with an article about a new Harpenden Beauty Clinic, which is aiming to continue the legacy of a legendary hairdresser. Entrepreneur Joanne Baum has launched Clinic 103 in Luton Road, replacing a salon with deep history in the area. The premises, once owned by the late Marion White, a well-known British hairdresser, had been closed for nearly a year. Marion's daughter, Sharon, was heartbroken to see her mother's legacy fading until Joanne earmarked the unit for a new shop. After the pair met in May, Marion warmly supported Joanne in taking over the lease, and the newly renovated salon now blends modern aesthetics upstairs with a bespoke piercing and tattoo studio downstairs. It was an emotional moment when Sharon first returned to the space, recalling childhood memories of her mother's salon. The pair have since become close friends, and to honour the past, Sharon has placed a cherished photo of Marion White in the shop to watch over the new business. Joanne commented, "With my vision and Sharon's blessing, Clinic 103 aims to continue the proud tradition of excellence, innovation and care that began there decades ago." The entrepreneur started out as a jeweller. She went on to become a leading name in body jewellery manufacturing during the 1990s. This led her to open three successful shops specialising in piercing and jewellery. She previously owned Pulse Beauty in Luton, which relaunched as Red Light Anti-Aging Clinic in 2010, specialising in advanced beauty and aesthetics, including laser hair and tattoo removal, advanced facials, colonic irrigation, and IV drips. In August 2025, Joanne took over the site at 103 Luton Road. The shop's predecessor, Marion, began hairdressing in St Albans at the age of 12, and alongside her husband, she expanded her salons across Hertfordshire and Bedfordshire, opened her own training school, and became a respected name in the industry. Her passion for her craft led her to qualify as a trichologist and specialise in wigs, helping cancer patients at hospitals including Lister and Luton and Dunstable. She also supported fundraising for the spinal unit at Stoke Mandeville Hospital through fashion shows. And there's a great photo of both Joanne Baum and Sharon White outside the clinic 103 in Luton Road, Harpenden.
Hello, Hilary here. Unexploded bomb found behind pub. A controlled explosion was successfully carried out in a field after a suspected First World War bomb was unearthed behind the Old Fox pub in Brickett Wood on Friday, October the 17th. Danny Harding, pub landlord, said the unexploded bomb was found at around 11 a.m. while work was being carried out at the back of the pub. Workers had been digging out a ditch for drainage when they unearthed it, unsure what it was. When police were first called, they cordoned off part of School Lane. However, this closure was soon lifted and only the area around the suspicious device remained cordoned off as of 1:30 p.m. Explosive ordnance disposal specialists were less concerned than they were initially after seeing an image of the device, and the pub was able to reopen, awaiting the arrival of the EOD. Hearts Police confirmed at around 4:30 p.m. that the controlled explosion had been successfully carried out.
Hello, this is Penny. Council priorities set out. Hertfordshire County Council has agreed a new, bold and ambitious corporate plan. The new plan, entitled On Your Side, outlines the council's key priorities from 2025 to 2028. It makes five key commitments: helping all children and young people to thrive and achieve their potential, fixing Hertfordshire's roads and buses, supporting those most in need, delivering more, and growing a more sustainable Hertfordshire. Council leader Steve Jarvis said, "This plan is more than a statement of intent. It's a reflection of our commitment to the people of Hertfordshire. We're determined to be a council that Hertfordshire's people recognise as being on their side, responsive, compassionate and forward-thinking. We want every resident to feel supported and to have the opportunity to achieve their aspirations. Specific objectives under each commitment will be measured and shared with residents."
Hello, this is Caroline, and my first story this week is about a serious car accident that happened in St Albans. Two taken to hospital following crash. Two people were taken to hospital following a crash which left one driver trapped in St Albans. At around 1:06 on Wednesday, October the 15th, multiple vehicles were involved in an incident on Harpenden Road. Harpenden Fire Station posted about the collision via Facebook, stating that crews attended a two-car collision on the A1081. Firefighters from Harpenden, Redbourne and St Albans attended, along with East of England Ambulance Service and Hearts Police. The post confirmed two people were taken to hospital for checkups. A spokesperson for Hearts Police added, "We were called at 1:06 p.m. today, following reports of a road traffic collision on Harpenden Road, St Albans. Two vehicles were involved."
This is Dan. The next story is from the St Albans Times. New parking charges are driving businesses away from Victoria Street. New parking charges introduced in a popular city centre shopping area have ruined trade and businesses are closing their doors as a result, say disgruntled retailers. Traders in Victoria Street are pointing the finger of blame at St Albans District Council, which introduced the charges in the spring, and accusing councillors of wrecking their livelihoods. Under the new measures, motorists are offered just 1 30-minute free period a day, with additional charges on top for a maximum of 2 hours, between 8:30 a.m. and 6:30 p.m. Mondays to Saturdays. The restrictions replace the previous arrangement of 1 hour free parking. Although small signs advertising the charges have been installed, there are no on-street parking machines, and many customers are caught out by the need to input a code to obtain the free time, which some traders feel is an intentional policy in order to reap more money from fines. The Home Cinema Company has confirmed that it will not be renewing its lease, and there are rumours that other businesses will be following suit. Lisa Friel from the Home Cinema Company said, "Businesses on Victoria Street certainly don't get the same support other streets and areas in St Albans get, which is a real shame given that we are on the main road that connects people from the station to the High Street." She said the parking signage is misleading and not located well, with the confusing new app system putting off many customers. "When we welcome clients into our showroom for a meeting, we want to offer them a drink and so on, but instead we feel we must go straight in with asking if they have correctly registered their parking due to the unclear signage. Some of our meetings can be lengthy due to the nature of our business, but there is only the option of parking for up to 2 hours, which then means our clients have to leave early or park further away. I can imagine these parking restrictions are having an impact on other shops and businesses on this road, as again, the hairdressers, for example, most appointments would last more than 2 hours. There have definitely been fewer vehicles parked along this stretch of road throughout the day since the new restrictions than there were prior." Various other retailers expressed similar views about the impact of the parking charges. St Albans District Council's lead for Public Realm, which includes parking, Councillor Helen Campbell, disputed the suggestion that the new charges are to blame for the pressure on local retailers. "The main reasons small businesses are struggling is because of higher business rates and the jobs tax, two Labour government taxes which have piled on thousands of pounds, making it impossible for so many small businesses in our area. The changing nature of the High Street and the rise in online shopping is also very challenging for retailers." Of course, the District Council never wanted to put up parking charges, but for as long as central government, whether Conservative or Labour, demands that councils deliver core services but without the money to do so, and only a handful of ways to raise revenue, the council has to choose between raising parking charges or declaring bankruptcy. Choosing the latter would mean losing control over local services, including planning, something we Lib Dems want to avoid at all costs.
Okay, next up, popular St Albans bakery strikes social media success. A popular St Albans bakery has struck social media stardom, with viewers praising the owner's sense of humour. More than 800,000 people have watched a TikTok video introducing Glaze Bakery in George Street to the world. The short clip features owner Ollie Broxton, 19, speaking about the business, intertwined with outtakes showing his off-camera personality. Commenting on his newfound virality, Ollie said, "I feel like less of a loner now 13,000 people are following my journey. Isn't it lovely? More than a million Huns have viewed my videos overall. A petrifying figure. People on the internet seem to really like me. I never would have thought it." Glaze has risen to 13,000 followers on the app and gained 200,000 likes in the process. "They say fame changes people, but I'm still covered in flour, only now a lot more people see it," Ollie added. "Nothing says success like being recognised while buying yeast. It's nice that thousands of strangers approve of my buns." Hundreds commented in support of Glaze, and many hope to visit the bakery in the near future. One said, "Now this is marketing, I'm obsessed." While another commented, "The sense of humour is why I'm visiting, first of all."
Christmas Carnival comes to town centre. Harpenden Christmas Carnival is set to return with plenty of festive cheer. The annual carnival will take place on Sunday, November the 23rd, from noon till 6 p.m, with thousands expected to fill the town centre for an afternoon of entertainment and festivities. Harpenden Town Council is inviting residents and visitors of all ages to join the celebration, which will feature Christmas workshops, food and drink stalls, outdoor bars, fairground rides and walkabout entertainers, including stilt walkers and elves. A Christmas farmers market and young enterprise stalls will line the high street, alongside Santa's Grotto and a host of festive activities. Stuart Matthews, managing partner and head of commercial law at Neves Solicitors, the event's principal sponsor, said, "We're delighted to be sponsoring this year's Christmas Carnival. Having had an office in Harpenden since 1957, we feel firmly rooted within the local community. This festive celebration promises to be a wonderful event for everyone to enjoy. The carnival procession will begin at 3 p.m, travelling from Lineker Park along the High Street to Vaughan Road. Led by the pipes and drums, the parade will feature Santa and his elves, stilt walkers, brownies and rainbows, police cadets, musicians, community groups and the cast of the Harpenden Panto. Live entertainment will be staged throughout the day on two stages. The lineup includes Rock Choir, Top Hat, SASA School of Performing Arts, Number 7, Harpenden and Wheat Hampstead Gang Show, and the cast of the Harpenden Panto. The mini stage will host Threefold, Abby Gathard, and Cheeky Elves Show. At 5 p.m, Harpenden's Mayor, Beth Fisher, will switch on the town's Christmas lights, joined by the winners of the Mayor's Christmas Card Competition. Free parking will be available at the station car park from noon, and attendees are encouraged to walk due to expected large crowds. Lost child wristbands will be available at the Town Council information tent.
Final event in year-long challenge. A dedicated runner is gearing up for his final event in a year-long charity challenge. Jethro Offi Maria, an active member of three running clubs, including the St Albans Striders, is set to participate in the Great South Run in Portsmouth on Saturday, October the 19th, raising funds for the National Autistic Society. He also plans to attend the 80th running of Miss Great Britain at Athena in Leicester. Jethro, who began running at 17, has been preparing for each race by completing a minimum of 8 laps on the track and recording his progress using his Garmin watch. He listens to his favourite Eurovision songs to stay motivated. Despite hospital stays in Harrow, Royston, Northampton and Bradford, Jethro has continued training. Earlier this year, he completed the London Marathon, raising £1,234 for the National Autistic Society. Now he's on the final leg of his fundraising effort for the UK's leading autism charity, having already completed the Rutland 10K in June, the Saucony London 10K in July, and the Vitality London 10K on September the 28th. Supporters can contribute to his fundraising effort by visiting his JustGiving page, justgiving.com/page/Jethro2025.
Widow beat Louis Theroux for award. A St Albans podcaster and widowed mother of three has beaten the best in the business to win the British Podcast Awards. Rosie Moss fended off celebrity challengers Emily Maitlis and Louis Theroux to take home gold for Best Interview Podcast at a glittering ceremony held at London's O2. The 44-year-old, who was educated at Beaumont School, launched her podcast, Widowed AF, as a way of processing overwhelming grief after her husband Ben disappeared while scuba diving in 2018. Their youngest child was just 6 months old at the time, and Ben's body has never been found. She received the trophy from TV and radio presenter Nick Grimshaw and comedian Maisie Adams. Speaking after the win, Rosie said, "When I started recording Widowed AF from my kitchen table, I never imagined it would one day be recognised on such a huge stage." This award isn't just for me. It's for every widow who has bravely shared their story on the podcast, and for the listeners who remind me daily why these conversations matter. To stand alongside names like Louis Theroux and Emily Maitlis and come away with gold shows that small but mighty can really make an impact. When nominated as a finalist, Rosie knew she was up against well-funded podcasts with millions of subscribers and large production teams. Rosie's show is a one-woman effort. She researches, records, and edits Widowed AF from her home in West Malling, Kent, while her two sons and daughter are at school. Since launching the show, Rosie has also been headhunted to present an independently produced podcast aimed at schools and parents of autistic children, and has been invited to speak at events ranging from university nursing and midwifery courses to law seminars and a wellness retreat in America. Widowed AF has also been selected by the Sunday Times as one of its pick of the podcasts and is available on all major platforms. And this article is accompanied with a wonderful picture of Rosie holding her award with a beaming smile, with Maisie Adam on one side and Nick Grimshaw on the other.
The next article today is titled "Scores of People Complain to MP About Far-Right Extremism." Scores of St Albans residents have been writing to the MP to express their disgust at far-right extremism. Following a spat with political activist Tommy Robinson, MP Daisy Cooper has revealed that many within her constituency have been penning their concerns regarding violence and far-right extremism on London streets. During Prime Minister's questions last week, the MP slammed Tommy Robinson as a racist hate preacher who was being stoked by Elon Musk, sparking backlash and support from across the political sphere. Daisy Cooper told the Hearts Advertiser, "Many more residents are also deeply worried about hate crime, anti-Semitism, Islamophobia, anti-LGBT plus marches, and reports that the US Embassy in London has held secretive talks with Nigel Farage on rolling back women's reproductive rights. Residents are calling on me as their representative to take a stand, and that's exactly what I intend to do." Tommy Robinson, formerly known as Stephen Yaxley Lennon, responded to the MP's comments with a series of posts on X, one of which read, "This lying, censorious authoritarian masquerading as a Liberal Democrat is none other than the deputy leader of her party."
Pub hosts talks by scientists. A pub in Harpenden has been hosting a series of evening talks by leading scientific experts. The sessions, part of a global initiative called Café Scientifique, are organised monthly by a team of researchers from nearby Rothamsted Research. They have attracted many attendees eager to hear about topics such as how new stars are born, unearthing what the Romans did in Hertfordshire, and how microbes can help to save the planet. Speakers hail from local universities, technology companies and research campuses, including Rothamsted, the world's oldest agricultural research institute. Anushree Sengupta, one of the organisers and a researcher at Rothamsted, said, "Café Scientifique is a rare opportunity to meet scientists face to face, learn about their work and ask them directly about what motivates them. We try to make sure that it is a fun and lively night out." The organisers say they are proud to continue a long tradition of scientific sharing and debating with roots in the learned societies and salons of the 18th century. The next Café Scientifique will be held on Tuesday, November the 19th at the Harpenden Arms on the High Street. It starts at 7 p.m, is free to attend, and the topic is "How do plants sense sugar?"
New recruits join Hertfordshire Police. Hertfordshire Constabulary has formally welcomed 11 new recruits to the Force Communications Room. They join the dedicated team answering emergency and non-emergency calls, web chats and online crime reports every minute of the day. Their arrival follows the completion of intensive training. On October the 13th, a graduation ceremony at police headquarters in Welwyn Garden City marked the occasion attended by family and friends. The recruits received certificates to mark the completion of their training. Digital and innovation manager Richard Wild addressed the newcomers, saying, "I look forward to seeing how you all progress in your new career."
Lussmann's hits 20-year milestone. Celebration includes charity throwback. Dubbed St Albans' favourite sustainable restaurant, Lussmann's is celebrating its 20th anniversary in the city with a throwback to 2005 prices. The Heritage Close Eatery is running an initiative which will see it donate £1 to St Albans Community First Responders for every diner who orders one or more of the three dishes sold over the next 5 weeks, while celebrating 2 decades in the area. André Lussmann, founder and managing director of Lussmann's, wishes to express his gratitude to the thousands of customers who have contributed to the restaurant's success and support a much-valued community organisation. "We've been fortunate to enjoy wonderful support from the people of St Albans and the surrounding area since we opened 20 years ago," André added. "As a small thank you to all those who've eaten in the restaurant during this time, we've created a 3-course menu at 2005 prices and will be donating £1 for every customer who orders these dishes. So, please come and enjoy these fabulous dishes made with all the usual ethical ingredients, and together we'll be supporting a brilliant charity." St Albans Community First Responders volunteer their time to attend emergency calls, providing urgent and potential life-saving care. Diners can order a sharing starter of camembert fondue with organic Devon charcuterie for £10.95, a main course of pasta alfredo made with organic Devon chicken for just £8.95, and autumn pudding with blackberries, apples, pears and plums for £4.95. Monica Cherry of St Albans Community First Responders added, "We're so grateful to Lussmann's for their support via this autumn dining experience, a wonderful celebration of 20 successful years of cuisine and business in St Albans. Proceeds from this initiative will assist our group of volunteer emergency responders to deliver life-saving care for people in St Albans and the surrounding area by helping to fund much-needed new defibrillators. Thank you to Lussmann's and to all the diners who will be helping save lives every time they order one of the special dishes. The 2005 menu is available in the St Albans restaurant for lunch and dinner at any time from Saturday, October the 18th to November the 23rd.
The mystery of Wildlife Meadows' unusual new inhabitant is solved. One of the rarest animals in the British countryside has been spotted at a local wildlife meadow. The glis-glis, or edible dormouse, can only be found in the UK in a 200-square-mile triangle in southeast England near the Chiltern Hills. It is the descendant of glis-glis kept in the private collection of banker and zoologist Lionel Rothschild at his home in Tring, which escaped in 1903 and established themselves in the wild. They can be found between Beaconsfield, Aylesbury and Luton, but nowhere else in this country, and this one was spotted on a hidden wildlife camera. Larger than the domestic dormouse, about the size of a small squirrel, it has now been discovered at Bedmond Lane Wildlife Meadow in St Albans. Glis-glis are a protected species, and it is an offence to disturb them without a licence from a wildlife authority. Dr. Robert Waring, who has been campaigning for decades to save the meadow from development, said, "When we saw the glis-glis on the video, it had us all scratching our heads as to what on earth it was. Is it a squirrel? No, too small. Is it a mouse, with a bushy tail like that? No. Is it a shrew? Nope, it hasn't got the long nose. The only thing that is certain is that it joins the badgers, bats, muntjac deer, foxes, rabbits, squirrels, hedgehogs, rats, which it is not, and lots of other animals, insects and plants that call Bedmond Lane Wildlife Meadow their home." Puzzle solved. It's a glis-glis, otherwise known as an edible dormouse, because in Roman times it was reared and fattened and eaten as a delicacy. Its habitat is rather limited and centred around Tring. The meadow is also home to muntjac deer, which also escaped from the same Rothschild collection, and whose barking can occasionally be heard. Bedmond Lane supports a massive range of biodiversity, with a complete and diverse ecosystem, and covers 14.5 acres of countryside next to the southwest corner of Verulamium Park. Dr. Waring added, "Countless other wonderful creatures all call this meadow home. For instance, an incredibly disparate range of species of insects, especially many different varieties of butterflies, moths, and bees. Significantly, two protected species of butterfly have also been sighted, the white letter hare streak and the small heath. A large range of birds, from red kites, kestrels, and owls, to robins, goldcrest, cuckoos and green woodpecker, jays and sparrows, create a melodious meadow chorus, and lots, an infinite number, of invertebrates enjoy this environment. The landscape is also peppered with mounds and domes of anthills. The meadow also welcomes many occasional visitors. Pheasants and partridges seek sanctuary from the nearby Gorhambury Estate Shoot, together with herons, ducks and geese who fly in from nearby Verulamium Park to graze. Even the peregrine falcons from St Albans Cathedral are occasionally seen scouting for food above the meadow. Swallows too are sometimes seen gracing the sky. The biodiversity and breathtakingly rich mosaic of different forms of life this meadow sustains is unbelievably spectacular. It is breathtaking and needs to be seen to be believed, and its value to the environment is immense. Bedmond Meadow is also the location of the locally and nationally rare lizard orchid, which has legal protection, meaning it would be an offence to intentionally or recklessly destroy it. But Carla Holmes, owners of the meadow, have declared their aim is to build 78 houses on the site, and St Albans District Council have controversially included it in their draft local plan. The Council's selection of sites proposed for release from the Greenbelt is based upon the Ove, Arup & Partners Limited Report on the Greenbelt Review of June 2023, the Arup Report. But Dr. Waring says they have failed to consider the biodiversity of these areas. When the wildlife meadow was originally included in the plan, Matthew Dodds, the Planning and Biodiversity Manager at Harts and Middlesex Wildlife Trust, condemned St Albans District Council for making a mockery of its own environmental credentials. The article is accompanied by four photographs. The first is a night vision view of the glis-glis, or edible dormouse. The other three show some of the other animals spotted at Bedmond Lane Wildlife Meadow, a fox, a badger, and a muntjac deer.
Next, women walk and talk for safety in Hertfordshire. A night of solidarity brought women together to walk and talk for safety. The event took place on Thursday, October the 16th, as part of Hertfordshire Constabulary's Walk and Talk scheme, which aims to address male violence against women and girls, MVAWG. Inspector Amy Sheldon from the Welwyn Hatfield Neighbourhood Policing Team said, "These events have proved really popular with women looking for a safe space to come together to socialise and exercise. Our attendees are able to share their views on local safety and what we can do to help tackle MVAWG. Those who attended were also offered free personal alarms, something we are told gives women and girls some peace of mind. We also spoke about Holly Guard, which is a personal safety app, and Ask for Angela, a scheme which helps women who are feeling uncomfortable in pub venues. I'd like to thank everybody who came along to make the events such a success." On Thursday, a walk and talk event took place at the Knife Angel in Welwyn Garden City to promote anti-violence, and a further six events took place at the same time in St Albans, Potter's Bar, Stevenage, Hitchin, South Oxley and Ware.
Residential burglaries rise. Harts Police have confirmed that the number of residential burglaries in St Albans has risen by 10% on last year. New data revealed the number of incidents is greater than the same period last year, with the St Albans district having the most offences, 143 burglaries, since April 1, 2025. St Albans Detective Inspector Sol Beer said, "Burglary and vehicle crime remains high in the St Albans district, but the majority of it is preventable. We continue to pursue and detect burglars, but it would be preferable if, together, we prevented them from happening in the first place." DI Beer's team, working with other departments across the force, continue to enforce Operation Guardian plans, which includes extra high visibility patrols and road checks to disrupt criminals using main roads into St Albans, Harpenden and London Coney. We know from speaking to convicted burglars that they will opt for the path of least resistance and an easy opportunity, he continued. The best way to deter burglars is by making sure all doors and windows are locked and ensure any PVC U doors are locked properly by lifting the handle and using the key to double lock them. Also consider installing a doorbell camera, an internal camera and/or monitored burglar alarm. The team are also making use of mobile and static ANPR cameras across the area. Covert patrols will be deployed on a daily basis too. There are no current hotspots, so it is vital that residents make their homes as uninviting as possible, the DI added. Hertfordshire Constabulary also announced the district is experiencing a rise in the theft of motor vehicles. DI Beer said, "Generally, if a car is locked, opportunist thieves won't force entry unless they are looking for tools. If you are not able to empty your vehicle or park in a garage, try and park with the rear doors right up against a garage or near a lamppost. Drivers with keyless cars should also consider investing in Faraday bags. If you believe a burglary is in progress, please call us on 999. We would rather turn up to a well-meaning call than miss an opportunity to catch a burglar or car theft in the act." Residential burglaries rise. Hearts Police have confirmed that the number of residential burglaries in St Albans has risen by 10% on last year. New data revealed the number of incidents is greater than the same period last year, with the St Albans district having the most offences, 143 burglaries since April 1st, 2025. St Albans Detective Inspector Sol Beer said, "Burglary and vehicle crime remains high in the St Albans district, but the majority of it is preventable. We continue to pursue and detect burglars, but it would be preferable if, together, we prevented them from happening in the first place." DI Beer's team, working with other departments across the force, continue to enforce Operation Guardian plans, which includes extra high visibility patrols and road checks to disrupt criminals using main roads into St Albans, Harpenden and London Coney. We know from speaking to convicted burglars that they will opt for the path of least resistance and an easy opportunity, he continued. The best way to deter burglars is by making sure all doors and windows are locked and ensure any PVC U doors are locked properly by lifting the handle and using the key to double lock them. Also consider installing a doorbell camera, an internal camera and/or monitored burglar alarm. The team are also making use of mobile and static ANPR cameras across the area. Covert patrols will be deployed on a daily basis too. There are no current hotspots, so it is vital that residents make their homes as uninviting as possible, the DI added. Hertfordshire Constabulary also announced the district is experiencing a rise in the theft of motor vehicles. DI Beer said, "Generally, if a car is locked, opportunist thieves won't force entry unless they are looking for tools. If you are not able to empty your vehicle or park in a garage, try and park with the rear doors right up against a garage or near a lamppost. Drivers with keyless cars should also consider investing in Faraday bags. If you believe a burglary is in progress, please call us on 999. We would rather turn up to a well-meaning call than miss an opportunity to catch a burglar or car theft in the act."
Students showcase digital skills. Pupils at a St Albans school showcased their digital skills during a hugely successful Digital Innovation Week. St Albans City School students from reception to Year 6 took part in the week-long festival, which aimed to inspire the next generation of programmers, engineers and designers. The event was organised by Dean Bushell, the school's digital and computing lead, and focused on encouraging pupils to become creators of technology rather than passive users. The festival was funded by the Auburn City School PTA and Digital Charity, the UK partner of Meet and Code, a European digital skills youth initiative. This meant all students, regardless of background, could participate. The school was filled with digital activities, including Year 6 students developing security systems for Lego houses, Year 5 students turning their digital designs into real objects using 3D printers, and Year 4 and 3 students learning about sequencing and inputs using a train set. Year 2 and 1 students explored early robotics and coding, while reception pupils will benefit from the addition of early coding robots in their classrooms. The school is a local hub for computing excellence, supporting other teachers in the area.
This is Rob, and I've got a piece from the St Albans Times about the city's conservation area and a complaint that it's spoiled by poor standard of street works. And this is a complaint taken up by various conservation groups, and it links to the Civic Society's campaign for a St Albans City Council when the changes to the local authorities are made, something that Steve reported on 2 weeks ago. So here's the piece. One of the most iconic and frequently photographed locations in St Albans city centre has been blighted by poorly installed street furniture. The Commit No Nonsense door to the clock tower is a popular spot for snaps by tourists and residents alike. The concrete fittings appear to have been slapped into place, spilling all over the paving stones, with similar distasteful efforts also found on the other side of the tower. They're just another example of a lack of care and consideration for our city centre shown by contractors engaged by Herts County Council. Earlier this year, historic cobbles dating back more than a century were ripped up and replaced with cheap-looking tarmac on a section of pavement near the Blacksmith's Arms. County Hall insisted the work was only temporary, and a full replacement programme will take place at an indeterminate future date. But similar patches elsewhere in the city centre, including St Peter Street, Market Place and Waxhouse Gate, have never been adequately repaired months later. The situation has met with condemnation from local heritage activists. Professor Tim Boson, chair of Conservation 50, said, "All too often the heritage of St Albans is ignored by inappropriate street works. This is more than disappointing. Our heritage isn't just a record of our past, it's the bedrock of our city's future. From the remains of Roman Verulamium, our historic alleyways, to the tower of our wonderful cathedral, it's this unique story that fuels our economy, defines our community, and gives St Albans an identity that is truly irreplaceable." Fred Challoner, who chairs St Albans Civic Society's Planning Advisory Group, said, "It could be argued that the cycle racks by the clock tower have the positive, unintended consequence of stopping nearby businesses from putting their bins there. The sight of overflowing commercial red bins has been an eyesore outside the clock tower for some time, but that misses the real point here. The failure to keep up decent standards in terms of materials and to match heritage assets like the cobbles means we're on a slippery slope, particularly in the conservation area. St Albans District Council's current focus, of course, is on what life looks like after the change to a unitary authority structure in 2027 as a result of local government review changes. We at the Civic Society are making the case for a St Albans Parish Council, that is a city council, to be established once the district council is abolished as part of the local government changes. This city council would have the responsibility of improving outcomes in cases such as these, only using reputable local contractors with accountability for the quality of the end result, good value for money, and alignment with local priorities, especially if supported by local community groups, residents and businesses." Campaigner David Caloxi, who has previously fought against the removal of historic stone sets in Park Avenue, said, "A couple of months ago I noticed that the historic cobbles between Daisy Cooper's St Albans office and the Blacksmith's Arms had been ripped up and replaced with tarmac, right beside the war memorial where commemorative services are held. the change felt jarring and disrespectful to the heritage of the area. Not long after, I saw that plastic benches on concrete plinths had been installed directly against our Grade 2 listed former town hall. These unsympathetic additions were organised by St Albans BID and rubber-stamped by the District Council with no apparent regard for the building's architectural significance or this part of the conservation area. Then a concerned resident pointed out that three modern steel bike racks had been installed in French Row, right next to our Grade 1 listed clock tower. Again, the placement felt careless and out of step with the historic surroundings. Looking around, I noticed at least five damaged bike racks nearby that are currently unusable, along with several abandoned bikes. These existing racks could easily be repaired or replaced to increase capacity, and there are also alternative locations that would have been far more appropriate for new installations. I contacted Historic England, who shared concerns about the poor siting of street furniture. However, because no planning applications were submitted for these additions, they were unable to formally comment or object. After many emails, phone calls and attempts to engage with St Albans Council, it's become clear that they simply don't care. The response I keep receiving is that under permitted development, they can do as they please. Whilst we have uncaring councils running our district and county, and contractors pretty much doing as they please, the look and feel of St Albans is changing for the worse at an alarming rate, and our conservation area and listed buildings stand for nothing. Our councils, he said, need to be working with caring residents who are often funding these unsympathetic changes. Harts County Council has been approached for a comment, but did not respond before the Times deadline.
A very exciting article next about a pair of rare elephant shrews who have arrived at their new home in Hertfordshire Zoo. The black and rufous sengi, also known as elephant shrew, is a small mammal native to the forests and shrublands of southeastern Kenya, but they are rare in the UK. In fact, they are only one of two breeding pairs in the country, having arrived from Leipzig Zoo in Germany and Prague Zoo in Czechia. These tiny insect-eating creatures weigh about the same as a small loaf of bread and are known for their extraordinary agility and long, flexible noses which resemble a miniature elephant's trunk. Jessie Boylan, Hertfordshire Zoo's curator, said, "I'm absolutely thrilled to welcome these incredible animals to the UK. They're a species I've long admired, and seeing them up close is a real privilege. I know our visitors will love them, and they'll help highlight the amazing ecosystem of the forest floor. It's very exciting to add such a special and unusual addition to Hertfordshire Zoo. It's hoped that one day the Sengi pair will contribute to breeding efforts for this pint-sized creature."
Sport Pub returns for Halloween. A popular sports pub in St Albans is finally reopening in the city centre, with the team buzzing to return. The future is finally clear for the Victoria, which shut with no explanation in the summer. Its former tenants, Tom and Paula, celebrated their leaving with a hoedown on June the 27th, and the pub has been closed ever since, until this weekend. The Latimore Road pub announced a relaunch for Thursday, October the 30th, with a new team featuring tenant Jake welcoming friends old and new. On Sunday, October the 19th, a new social media post by the pub read, "After a little break, we're thrilled to announce the Victoria in St Albans is officially reopening its doors on Thursday, October the 30th, and we can't wait to welcome you all back." Jake and the team are buzzing to get the pub alive again. With great drinks, good vibes, live sport, we're really looking forward to welcoming friends old and new. And the celebrations don't stop there. Join us on Friday, October the 31st for our Halloween party. Expect spooky tunes, fancy dress and a few frightfully good surprises. So, dust off your witch hats, grab your mates and come raise a glass with us. It's going to be a killer weekend.
Rudolph Run set to return. Get ready to jingle all the way through St Albans as the Rudolph Run returns on Sunday, December the 7th. Hosted by Rennie Grove Peace Hospice Care, this annual festive fundraiser invites families, friends and festive fanatics of all ages to don their antlers, pull on their brightest Christmas jumpers and take part in a 1.5 or 5 kilometre fun run, starting at the Water End Barn on St Peter's Street. Angela Doran from St Albans will be taking part with 10 members of the Walking Netball group she runs, in memory of one of the group's members who died sadly last year. Angela said, "After our friend Alison died last year, a member of our Walking Netball group suggested organising a fundraising event in her memory to thank Rennie Grove Peace for caring for Ali at the end of her life. Our Walking Netball group is made up of people ranging in age from 40 to 80. So we wanted to choose a fundraising event that would suit everybody, and the Rudolph run looked perfect. It'll be a great opportunity for us to get together, take part in an activity we will all enjoy, and raise money for a great cause in memory of our dear friend Alison." Runners are being challenged to raise £99, which could fund 3 hours of care from a Rennie Grove Peace physiotherapist who works with patients to manage their symptoms and boost their quality of life through movement. Anybody who raises over £99 will earn a limited edition Rudolph Run running buff. Emma Stewart, events manager at Rennie Grove Peace Hospice Care, says, "We're looking forward to another great Rudolph Run with some exciting new additions, including face painting on the day and fundraising incentives to encourage everyone to raise as much money as they can for local hospice care. I'd like to thank Warner Brothers Studios Leavesden for being the headline sponsor of this year's event and allowing us to make it the biggest one yet. Tickets are on sale now at an early bird price of £10 for adults and £6 for children, with family tickets available for £30, and a family ticket includes up to 2 adults and 3 children. Early bird pricing is available until Sunday, November the 2nd, and every ticket includes a festive headband to wear on the day. Visit their website, renniegrovepeace.org/RudolphRunHearts, to find out more.
Outstanding rating for care provider again. Glowing report for Abbott's Care Limited as it receives top rating for the third time. The Care Quality Commission, CQC, has rated a Hertfordshire-based care provider as outstanding once again. Abbott's Care Limited was given top marks for a third time following an inspection from June to August this year. The service provides personal care to people living in their own homes, and its Hertfordshire branch was supporting 871 people with personal care at the time of the inspection. It operates in St Albans, Harpenden, Stevenage, Hatfield, Welwyn Garden City and Potter's Bar, among other areas. CQC carried out this inspection as part of its routine monitoring of care services and rated the provider outstanding for being well-led and caring. Abbott's Care was also issued a good grading for being safe, effective and responsive. Hazel Roberts, CQC Deputy Director of Operations in the East of England, said, "When we inspected the service, it was clear that staff knew the people they cared for well and the leaders were engaged and listen to people's feedback. Most people we spoke to were exceptionally positive about the quality of their care. Staff planned people's care with them and knew how to meet their needs. They treated people kindly and respected them as individuals. One person told us how staff had learned to make porridge the way they liked it. Other staff members had looked after people's pets when they were in hospital, or took a person's hearing aids for repairs because they had no family that could. To help tackle loneliness and isolation, staff hosted tea parties 3 times a year. They invited and supported all the people in their care to attend, and people said going that extra mile made a big difference to them. People told inspectors how they felt safe. Staff knew how to reduce risks to people's safety while enabling them to still do things that mattered to them. They also responded to people's needs swiftly to minimise any discomfort or distress, and knew how to safeguard people from risks of abuse or neglect. Hazel added, "Leaders introduced free welfare checks for people at risk of isolation and organised the Abbott's Friends, a network of volunteers offering practical help and companionship to vulnerable people in Hertfordshire. Leaders supported their staff well, enabling them to go that extra mile. The leaders themselves were skilled, honest, and exceptionally inclusive. When they spotted opportunities or people raised concerns to them, we found they took action to improve people's care. Everyone at Abbott's Care should be proud of what they've achieved for the people in their care, and we hope others look to this report as an example of great practice." Inspectors noted that the service worked well with other organisations and professionals to give people a seamless care experience. Other neighbouring care services were supported when they needed it, and leaders advocated for better working conditions for all care workers. The full report will be published on CQC's website in the coming days. Outstanding rating for care provider, again. Glowing report for Abbott's Care Limited, as it receives top rating for the third time. The Care Quality Commission, CQC, has rated a Hertfordshire-based care provider as outstanding once again. Abbott's Care Limited was given top marks for a third time following an inspection from June to August this year. The service provides personal care to people living in their own homes, and its Hertfordshire branch was supporting 871 people with personal care at the time of the inspection. It operates in St Albans, Harpenden, Stevenage, Hatfield, Welwyn Garden City and Potter's Bar, among other areas. CQC carried out this inspection as part of its routine monitoring of care services and rated the provider outstanding for being well-led and caring. Abbott's Care was also issued a good grading for being safe, effective and responsive. Hazel Roberts, CQC Deputy Director of Operations in the East of England, said, "When we inspected the service, it was clear that staff knew the people they cared for well, and the leaders were engaged and listened to people's feedback. Most people we spoke to were exceptionally positive about the quality of their care. Staff planned people's care with them and knew how to meet their needs. They treated people kindly and respected them as individuals. One person told us how staff had learned to make porridge the way they liked it. Other staff members had looked after people's pets when they were in hospital, or took a person's hearing aids for repairs because they had no family that could." To help tackle loneliness and isolation, staff hosted tea parties 3 times a year. They invited and supported all the people in their care to attend, and people said going that extra mile made a big difference to them. People told inspectors how they felt safe. Staff knew how to reduce risks to people's safety while enabling them to still do things that mattered to them. They also responded to people's needs swiftly to minimise any discomfort or distress, and knew how to safeguard people from risks of abuse or neglect. Hazel added, "Leaders introduced free welfare checks for people at risk of isolation and organised the Abbott's Friends, a network of volunteers offering practical help and companionship to vulnerable people in Hertfordshire. Leaders supported their staff well, enabling them to go that extra mile. The leaders themselves were skilled, honest, and exceptionally inclusive. When they spotted opportunities or people raised concerns to them, we found they took action to improve people's care. Everyone at Abbott's Care should be proud of what they've achieved for the people in their care, and we hope others look to this report as an example of great practice." Inspectors noted that the service worked well with other organisations and professionals to give people a seamless care experience. Other neighbouring care services were supported when they needed it, and leaders advocated for better working conditions for all care workers. The full report will be published on CQC's website in the coming days.
Our final story today is all about a dog who has been rescued and reunited with her owners after being stuck inside a drainage pipe for nearly 9 hours. On Monday, October the 13th, Bella went missing, much to her owner, Joanne Brinkley, and her family's concern. Hours passed before the family realised she was stuck in a narrow rainwater drainage pipe at their house in Potter's Bar. 15 firefighters attended the scene but were unable to rescue the pup, leaving the task down to 2 heroic engineers from DinoRod, a plumbing and drainage service which provides 24-hour emergency support. The engineers used specialist drainage CCTV equipment to locate Bella in the dark before encouraging the family to call Bella's name in attempts to lure her out, all the while lighting up her way. After a total of 8 hours and 30 minutes underground, Bella finally emerged safe and well and was reunited with her family. Joanne said, "I can't thank these 2 amazing men enough for rescuing my dog. Not only did they come all the way from Cambridge in the middle of the night, they did it out of pure kindness. They didn't even charge me a penny. Their dedication, compassion and willingness to go above and beyond is absolutely amazing."
Support for rising energy bills. This is a piece by the Harpenden and Berkhamsted MP, Victoria Collins. As it gets colder, many families face the daunting prospect of soaring energy bills. Constituents are telling me about the immense pressure these costs place on household budgets, forcing difficult choices between heating and other essentials. The reality is stark. Energy costs show no sign of decreasing across the UK. Whilst the government announced an expansion to the Warm Home Discount in June 2025, extending £150 rebates to 2.7 million additional households next winter, this barely scratches the surface of the crisis we face. Though I welcome any attempt to relieve pressure on soaring household bills, the Warm Home Discount offers only a temporary lifeline and leaves middle-income households that do not meet the requirements struggling, including the local people that have contacted me. A one-off £150 payment cannot address the underlying problem of relentlessly rising energy bills that keep families awake at night worrying about staying warm. That's why I recently challenged the government directly, asking whether they will commit to providing a lasting solution to cut residents' energy bills. We need an emergency 10-year home upgrade programme, including meaningful incentives to install heat pumps that cover real costs. Liberal Democrats have also called to halve the price of energy by breaking the link between the cost of electricity and the price of gas, whilst increasing investment on cheap, renewable power and home insulation. I have repeatedly held the government to account, asking what fiscal steps they are taking to support households in Harpenden and Berkhamsted with their energy bills. I've also highlighted how high energy costs put a strain on rural businesses, threatening our local economy. I remain absolutely committed to fighting for affordable energy for every household in Harpenden and Berkhamsted. No one should face the impossible choice between heating their home and putting food on the table. If you're struggling with energy costs or have concerns you'd like to raise, please contact me at victoria.collins.mp@parliament.uk. Together, we can push for the long-term solutions our community deserves.
Harking Back with Emma Brennan. Crossbows, dodgy accents, and scenery from another planet. Emma takes a look back on her family's favourite TV programmes.
Television company ITV is celebrating its 70th anniversary this year. Since its launch in 1955, ITV, or independent television, has been a big part of British social history and culture. It was the country's first commercial channel and rival to the BBC. When TV was first broadcast in the UK during the 1930s, my mum's family didn't have a television set, with radio remaining their main source of entertainment. But by the time I came along in the 70s, sitting in front of the box of an evening to watch our favourite game shows or sitcoms was very much a part of everyday life. We still had a black and white television with a picture that regularly slipped and went fuzzy if you didn't point the aerial in the correct direction, but it didn't seem to spoil our enjoyment. Even the next generation of 1990s children were still glued to TV shows. So it's hard to imagine that in the past 5 years, more and more people have turned to streaming what they watch online at a time of their choosing and through devices other than a TV. In fact, as part of ITV's anniversary celebrations, you can stream many of the favourite shows of the past 7 decades on demand. So it's come full circle. We were never the kind of children who were glued to the screen constantly, but there are undoubtedly TV programmes that take me right back to happy times in my youth. Among our favourites were sitcoms such as Allo Allo, set during the German occupation of France in the Second World War, and featuring a lot of very dodgy French accents. We also liked Rising Damp, which was about the interaction between the seedy landlord of a run-down rental property and its disgruntled tenants. Both would be seen as politically incorrect by today's standards. The whole family enjoyed anything featuring Ronnie Barker and David Jason, including Open All Hours. Then there were game shows such as The Golden Shot, where, rather alarmingly, a blindfolded cameraman armed with a crossbow attempted to hit targets, guided only by contestants' basic instructions of left a bit, right a bit. Another 1970s classic was 3-2-1, with Ted Rogers and Dusty Bin. I distinctly recall my dad finding this one singularly irritating, because every clue could have been the bin, a car, or a holiday. He hated unfairness, and to him there was absolutely no way to win the best prizes through skill, just sheer fluke.
We were all fans of action heroes, including Mum's favourite, The Saint, with Roger Moore as the suavely sophisticated Simon Templar. My sister and I preferred The Professionals, with CI5 agents Bodie and Doyle racing around in Ford Capris. My sister was secretly in love with Bodie. She told me I could have the curly-haired one. Such was her fandom that she received a Professionals gift box one Christmas, complete with ID card, cap gun and holster. Doctor Who was the favourite of my nephew, who could be described as something of a superfan. He has every episode on video from across the decades, featuring all the different incarnations of the Doctor. When he was young, he got really cross with me when I laughed at some of the hammy acting, unconvincing monsters and basic scenery that required a great deal of imagination to believe they were on another planet. It's hard to imagine that as kids we found these episodes of Doctor Who really scary, with my sister regularly hiding behind the sofa when aliens appeared on screen. So many things have changed over the years to reflect the times, not least the soap operas, which now seem to be all about highlighting key issues of the day and featuring far-fetched audience-grabbing storylines. Emmerdale, for example, is unrecognisable from the original scenes of everyday farming folk in the Yorkshire Dales. I couldn't write about the anniversary of commercial TV without mentioning the adverts, which were memorable in their own right. Who can forget the Cadbury's Smash instant potato ads featuring aliens laughing at earthlings for peeling and mashing potatoes instead of simply pouring hot water onto some hydrated starchy muck, as Dad called it? Then there was the James Bond-style milk tray man who, clad entirely in black, conquered a number of obstacles to let himself into a hotel room and leave a box of chocolates on the bed. And all because the lady loves milk tray. My dad did attempt to emulate the milk tray man on occasion, insofar as he overcame parking issues and queues at the till in Woolies in order to buy Mum chocolates for birthdays or Christmas. However, unlike the milk tray man, he stopped short of wearing a black roll-neck jumper, like being slowly strangled. and had no intention of diving into shark-infested waters, out skiing an alpine avalanche, or swinging from the bottom of a cable car to secure Mum's favourite sweets.
This is Jilly with the radio listings for the 7 days beginning Saturday, 25th of October. And starting with Saturday, the 25th of October, the real comedy controllers brings us favourite archive moments from the satire and sitcoms of the 1960s and 70s. It's on Radio 4 Extra at 3 p.m. and 9 p.m. A recent performance from the Royal Opera House of Puccini's opera Tosca is on Radio 3 at 6 p.m. On Radio 4, the house at number 48 tells the story of a man's quest to uncover his family's dark past and reclaim a fortune stolen under the Nazis. The first 5 episodes can be heard on Radio 4 at 9 p.m. today, before the series continues next week. Moving on to Sunday, 26th of October. The castaway in Desert Island Discs is actor and writer Lenny James, on Radio 4 at 10 a.m. While in an archive edition from 2018, comedian and TV star Alan Carr is the castaway on Radio 4 Extra at 6 a.m, 11 a.m. and 5 p.m. In Sissinghurst, An Unfinished History, Adam Nicholson reads his account of growing up at Sissinghurst in Kent, bought in 1932 by his grandparents Vita Sackville West and Harold Nicholson. That's Radio 4 Extra at 7:30 a.m, 12:30 p.m. and 6:30 p.m. In Garden of England, Aidan Tulloch spends the summer on a fruit farm in Kent, where he explores the human stories behind a punnet of blueberries, on Radio 4 at 1:30 p.m. The Castle of Otranto is an adaptation of Horace Walpole's Gothic horror set in medieval Italy, Radio 4 at 3 p.m. To mark the 200th anniversary of the birth of Johann Strauss II, The Waltz Paradox visits Vienna to explore his life, character and influence, on Radio 3 at 7:15 p.m. Turning now to those programmes which are broadcast at the same time every day, from Monday to Friday. Murder in Mesopotamia is an Agatha Christie mystery, starring John Moffat as Hercule Poirot, on Radio 4 Extra at 6 a.m, 11 a.m. and 5 p.m. every day this week. The book of the week is Every Last Fish, an exploration of the world of fish and the industry that brings the creatures of the sea to dinner plates across the country. Radio 4 at 11:45 a.m. Monday to Friday. The House at number 48 continues on Radio 4 at 1:45 p.m. every day this week. The composer of the week is Luciano Berio, 1925 to 2003, on Radio 3 at 4 p.m. each day. Edith Piaf, in 5 songs, explores the life and work of the Paris-born singer through 5 songs associated with her, on Radio 3 at 9:45 p.m. Monday to Friday. The Book at Bedtime continues the reading of Northwoods by Daniel Mason, on Radio 4 at 10:45 p.m. each day. Here are some individual programmes to listen to through the week, starting with Monday the 27th of October. In an episode of That Reminds Me from 2000, the late Victor Spinetti recalls his life and career, on Radio 4 Extra at 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. The short series The Tax Conundrum continues, finding out what the UK can learn from the tax systems of Sweden and Estonia, on Radio 4 at 11 a.m. there's an edition of the popular panel show, Just a Minute, on Radio 4 Extra at 2 p.m. and 8 p.m. And Disordered is a new comedy series about a single father coping with the rigours of daily life, on Radio 4 at 2:15 p.m. Now, Tuesday, the 28th of October. King of Bath is a historical comedy about Beau Nash, 1674 to 1761, on Radio 4 Extra at 7 a.m, 12 noon and 6 p.m. The Lost Stradivarius is a dramatisation of John Mead Faulkner's 1895 ghost novel, on Radio 4 Extra at 2:30 p.m. and 8:30 p.m. In History's Toughest Heroes, Ray Winston tells the story of Constance Bulwer Lytton, an aristocrat who was arrested for her involvement in the women's suffrage movement, on Radio 4 at 3 p.m. Queen Victoria's Nightmares discovers new information about the mental health struggles of Queen Victoria through the personal diaries of her doctor, on Radio 4 at 4 p.m. Farlon 4 Investigates examines the scale of problem gambling in the armed forces and the devastating impact on those serving veterans and their families, on Radio 4 at 8 p.m. Peter White brings us his regular programme In Touch, with news and information for people who are blind or partially sighted, on Radio 4 at 8:40 p.m. Now, Wednesday, 29th of October. In today's drama, Back Home, Noreen, the head of a wildlife charity, returns home to her native Zambia after 20 years in the UK to give a speech about animal conservation, only for her family to bring up some difficult issues. Radio 4 at 2:15 p.m. Titus Groan is a dramatisation of the first part of Mervyn Peake's gothic fantasy series Gormenghast, on Radio 4 Extra at 2:30 p.m. and 8:30 p.m. Choral Evensong comes from the Chapel of Lancing College, on Radio 3 at 3 p.m. In the Life Scientific, the Natural History Museum's Caroline Smith talks about what meteorites and other space rocks reveal about the early solar system and the potential for ancient life on Mars, on Radio 4 at 9 p.m. Then on Thursday the 30th of October, Why Birds Migrate and How They Navigate is the topic in the fourth of a selection of archive episodes of In Our Time, chosen by Melvin Bragg, on Radio 4 at 9 a.m. The subject of today's great lives is George Bernard Shaw, 1856 to 1950, on Radio 4 Extra at 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. Today's drama is Samhain by Ben Lewis. Claire and her husband are staying in an isolated old house on the remote Scottish island of Jura at the end of October. Of all the nights of the year, this is the one when the veil between this world and the next is said to be at its thinnest. Claire's past is about to reach out into her present. Radio 4 at 2:15 p.m. In Ramblings, Claire Balding joins Nick Wilson for a circuit around Pittsford Reservoir in Northamptonshire. A former soldier, Nick now uses a power chair after a spinal injury and years of chronic pain made walking impossible. Radio 4 at 3 p.m. And in Radical with Amol Rajan, the journalist and broadcaster offers his take on the week's news, on Radio 4 at 11 p.m. And finally to Friday the 31st of October. a 6-part dramatisation from 1968 of The Day of the Triffids by John Wyndham begins on Radio 4 Extra at 6:30 a.m., 11:30 a.m. and 5:30 p.m. In the Loop is a new series in which poet Paul Farley investigates how circular formations are embedded in cultures throughout history, starting at the 5,000-year-old stone circle at Castlerigg in Cumbria, on Radio 4 at 2:45 p.m. The Price of North Sea Oil is the story of Angie Weatherhead, who was 5 when her father was killed working in North Sea oil production in 1975. Years later, a chance to mark his death with dignity has a profound effect on her life. Radio 4 at 4:30 p.m. Friday night is Music Night, has a themed concert of film and TV music, including works by John Williams, Prokofiev and Grieg, on Radio 3 at 7:30 p.m. Enjoy your listening week.
Hello, this is Fiona with a selection of audio-described TV programmes from Saturday the 25th to Friday the 31st of October. Starting with Saturday the 25th of October. There are 3 episodes of The Simpsons on Channel 4, starting at 11:05 this morning. On BBC One, at 11:30 a.m, we learn about the women who worked in Cornwall's mines in Rick Stein's Cornwall. A Murder at the Vicarage is investigated in Agatha Christie's Marple on ITV3 at 3 p.m. The judges welcome back the remaining pairs in tonight's Strictly Come Dancing at 6:20 p.m. The early evening film on BBC Two at 6:20 p.m. is The Fantasy, Edward Scissorhands. Bethany uncovers some of Bulgaria's cultural and historical treasures in tonight's episode of Bethany Hughes' Treasures of the World at 7 o'clock, Channel 4. Hugh Bonneville narrates an aerial guide to the North Yorkshire Moors Railway from the coast at Whitby, across the moors to the market town of Pickering. Great British Train Journeys from Above is on Channel 4 at 8 p.m. The crime thriller The Equalizer, starring Denzel Washington, is this evening's film on Channel 4 at 9 p.m. Air authorities search desperately for a plane in 9 bodies in a Mexican morgue on BBC One at 9:20 p.m. So now on to Sunday the 26th of October. Sunday with Laura Kunzberg, featuring interviews with politicians and key public figures, is on BBC One at 9 a.m. Roald Dahl's The Witches is this afternoon's fantasy film on BBC One at 3:15 p.m. Wildlife cameraman Hamza Yusin visits the South Devon coast in a bid to spot the Atlantic bluefin tuna as they leap in the waves in the hunt for small bait fish. Hamza's Hidden Wild Isles is on BBC One at 6:15 p.m. Strictly Come Dancing, The Results is on BBC One at 7:15 p.m. Guy Martin celebrates the 200th anniversary of the earliest passenger train's first journey along the Stockton and Darlington Railway in the documentary Guy Martin, The British Train That Changed the World on Channel 4 at 7:30 p.m. Kitty teeters on the verge of a nervous breakdown in the drama Riot Women at 9 p.m. on BBC One. Now the nights are drawing in, could there be anything nicer than joining Bob Mortimer and Paul Whitehouse to go fishing on a sunny day in May? It's Paul's birthday this week, so they're hoping to catch wild brown trout in the River Itchen in Hampshire. This new series of Mortimer and Whitehouse Gone Fishing starts tonight on BBC Two at 9 p.m. Explosives officer Lana Washington and her team are called to investigate a suspected bomb in an abandoned taxi. The new series of the drama Trigger Point is on ITV One at 9 p.m. and continues tomorrow at the same time. Here are the programmes which are on the same time throughout the week. On BBC One, Bargain Hunt is 12:15 each day, but only audio described Tuesday to Thursday. Lost and Found in the Lakes is at 2:30 each day, and the repair shop on the road is at 3:45. On ITV1, Dickinson's Real Deals is 2 p.m. each day. On Channel 4, there are two episodes of the US sitcom Frasier, starting at 8:40 a.m. on Monday, and four episodes starting at 9:10 each morning, Tuesday to Friday. Heartbeat is on ITV3 at around 5:45 and 6:50, Monday to Friday. And now for Monday, the 27th of October. A new series exploring the growth of the UK discount stores, Secrets of Super Cheap Shopping, is on Channel 4 at 8 p.m. Once again, it's time to get our brains working with Mastermind at 7:30 and University Challenge at 8:30, both on BBC Two. There are several choices at 9 tonight. Morgan takes drastic measures after Grace and Sean bring in Accountant George for questioning in tonight's episode of the police drama Blue Lights on BBC One at 9 p.m. Or there's a new four-part documentary series starting tonight, beginning an in-depth look at the amazing human story of space exploration. Once Upon a Time in Space is on BBC Two at 9 p.m. Lana and the team grow suspicious that they're not being told the truth as the investigation deepens. Episode 2 of Trigger Point, that's on ITV1 at 9. The polished facade of the Forsyth's family life is about to crumble in tonight's episode of the drama The Forsyths on Channel 5 at 9. And finally, Reverend Richard Coles heads north to the Faroe Islands in the second episode of Sailing the Shipping Forecast with the Reverend Richard Coles on More 4 at 9 p.m. Tuesday the 28th of October. To mark her 90th birthday earlier this year, Mary Berry looks back at her long career in food and meets some old friends in a new six-part series, Mary at 90, A Lifetime of Cooking, on BBC Two at 7:30 p.m. Stacey and a team of experts help another family declutter their home. Sort Your Life Out with Stacey Solomon, BBC One at 8 p.m. Alice Roberts joins a team of archaeologists hunting for relics from Oliver Cromwell's time. Digging for Britain is on BBC Two at 8 p.m. The four remaining bakers take on three patisserie challenges for the semi-final of the Great British Bake Off at 8 p.m. on Channel 4. Neil disagrees with Daniel about the murder victims being connected by their interest at the war and investigates Ned's wife. The drama Murder Before Evensong is on Channel 5 at 9 p.m. In My Own Words, Tom Jones on BBC One at 10:40 sees the veteran singer looking back on his life and career. On Wednesday the 29th of October, an old butcher's bike, a pair of motorcycle racing goggles, a mysterious painting found in an attic and a miniature toy boat are brought into the repair shop on BBC One at 8 p.m. In the documentary Tropic of Cancer with Simon Reeve on BBC Two at 8, the adventurer continues his journey in India. Breakfast proves to be a wake-up call for the faithful as the traitors strike again. The Celebrity Traitors is BBC One at 9 p.m. Kevin MacLeod meets a couple who bought a folly next to their home in the West Midlands with plans to knock it down and replace it with a sprawling 21st century castle. Find out how they get on in Grand Designs on Channel 4 at 9 p.m. In North Wales, the Maritime Rescue Coordination Centre receive a call from a worried son about his 83-year-old father who's gone missing during a walk on the coastal path. Coast Guard SOS Search and Rescue is on Channel 5 at 9 p.m. Thursday the 30th of October. Another batch of entrepreneurs seek investment when they enter the Dragon's Den on BBC One at 8 p.m. In Shetland, it's the busiest night of the year as police deal with Viking revellers and a drunk driver. Highland Cops is on BBC One at 8 p.m. The architecture ventures deep into New Zealand's Marlborough Sounds on the edge of one of the wildest and most unforgiving stretches of water in the world. George Clark's Home in the Wild is on Channel 4 at 8 p.m. A new six-part series, Art Detective, starts tonight at 8 p.m. on the UK and Drama Channel. The opening case is set in a stately home with a dodgy Vermeer and a dead body in the study. As the game nears the end, the murderers become increasingly harder to carry out for the traitors. Celebrity Traitors on BBC One at 9 p.m. In the drama The Ridge on BBC Two at 9 p.m, Mia makes enemies as she begins to line up the suspects. Tristan and Charlotte enjoy a romantic picnic in tonight's episode of All Great Creatures Great and Small on Channel 5 at 9. And we come to Friday the 31st of October. When someone sets fire to the local doctor's car, it's up to Eve and her team to find out who did it and why in this first episode of a new series of Hope Street on BBC One at 2 p.m. And now for a documentary investigating life in Colombia in guerrilla groups' battle for control of cocoa fields and lucrative smuggling routes. Romero Galdós travels to the Catatumbo region to meet the women fighting to protect their children. Unreported World, Guns and Cocaine, Colombia's Narco Wars is on Channel 4 at 7:30 p.m. Yet another new drama series, when a scientist is found dead on a boat, D.I. Mackenzie Clark suspects they are murdered. Return to Paradise is on BBC One at 8 p.m. An investigation into the murder of a hurling star uncovers a gambling and prostitution ring and sporting rivalries as an entire community falls under suspicion. The first episode of the final two-part story in the Irish detective drama Borderline is on ITV1 at 9 p.m. As it's Halloween, we end the night with a supernatural thriller Don't Look Now on BBC Two at 11:40 p.m. John and Laura Baxter go to Venice, where they meet two sisters, one of whom claims she can communicate with their dead daughter, drawing the Baxters towards a mysterious fate. It stars Julie Christie and Donald Sutherland. Do enjoy your TV week.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Hello everyone, this is 10 Today, a 10-minute set of exercises to do at home to help keep yourself active. Before we get to today's presenter, a couple of housekeeping points to note. The 10 Today project is funded by the Big Lottery and Sport England, and when you're doing the exercises, it's important that you don't push yourself too far, and by taking part, you agree to 10 Today's terms and conditions. You can read these terms and conditions at tnflink.uk/10T, and the 10T is the digit 1, the digit 0, and the letter T. And please remember that you agree to take part at your own risk. Today's exercises are brought to you by Jeff, and here he is.
Hello everyone, welcome to 10 Today, broadcast number 3, where we focus on stretching. This is a short 10-minute physical activity routine which will get you moving and stretching. It's great for your health, including improving your balance and building up your strength. Just take it at your own pace. There's plenty of options. If an exercise feels too much, just take it easy and have a break. All the exercises can be done either standing up or sitting down. Just do whatever feels good for you today. We want you all to do the exercise safely. You are responsible for monitoring how you are feeling throughout the session. If you feel any discomfort or pain, if you feel unwell or dizzy or experience palpitations, then please stop and seek medical advice. Please remember, you agree to take part at your own risk. If you're remaining seated, at least to begin with, it would be a good idea if you can use a hard chair that you can sit upright in, preferably without arms, which can get in the way of some exercises. With your feet flat on the floor, if you are standing up, just step your feet hip width apart, relax your shoulders and stand up nice and tall, and take a couple of deep breaths. If you're sitting down, place both feet firmly on the floor, keep your back straight, relax, your shoulders and take a couple of deep breaths in and out. In and out. So we're going to start with calf stretch. So if you're standing, have your feet facing forward and step your right foot out in front of you with your foot flat on the floor. And then bend into the right leg, keeping your other leg straight. Put your hands on your right thigh and hold this position, feeling that stretch in your other leg. If you're sitting, straighten out your right leg and place your heel on the floor so your toes are pointing upwards. Keep your left leg bent with your foot flat on the floor and put your hands on your right thigh and lean forward. You should feel that nice stretch in your straight leg. The important thing about stretching is that when you feel the muscle starts to stretch, just hold it there. Don't take it any further. So hold that stretch for 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Now we're going to swap legs. If you're standing with your feet facing forward, step forward with your left leg and bend into that left leg, keeping your other leg straight. The weight should be on the left foot. And if you're sitting, straighten out the left leg and put your heel on the floor and your toes pointing up, and then keep your right leg bent. Put your hands on your bent thigh and lean your chest slightly forward into the stretch. You should feel a nice stretch in your straight leg. Hold for 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Next, we're going to do a hamstring stretch. Feet facing forward, step forward with your right foot, placing your foot out in front of you with your foot flat on the floor. Keep this leg straight. Then bend your left leg and put your hands on your hips and just lean the chest forward gently. Remember to keep your back straight. Whether you're sitting or standing, you should feel a nice stretch down the back of your leg. Hold for 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Then return to an upright position and swap your legs. So this time, step forward with your left foot, placing your foot out in front of you. With your foot flat on the floor, then bend your right leg and just lean forward gently. Again, that nice long stretch. Hold for 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Next up, we have a few head and neck stretches. Starting with the head tilt forward, tilt your head gently forward, as if you're nodding, nice and slowly, and then return upright. Just do that a couple more times. So nodding nice and slowly downwards, return upright. Keep going slowly so that you feel a nice stretch in your neck. And the final neck stretch, head rotation. Turn your head to the right slowly, as if you're looking over your right shoulder. Then return to the middle. Then return your head left slowly, as if you're looking over your left shoulder. And just keep going, looking from left to right, slowly feeling that nice stretch in your neck. So for the next one, bend your right arm and bend it over your head so your hand is touching your back, like you're scratching your back, and your elbow is next to your ear. With your other hand, press gently on your elbow and feel that nice stretch in your arm. Hold for 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, then release. Then do the same on the other side. So bending your arm over your head, with your hand on your back and placing the other hand on your elbow and pressing gently, feeling that nice stretch down your arm. Hold for 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Now we have the side stretch. Stand or sit up tall, raise your right arm high with your palm facing up. Then lean slightly over to your left side, nicely and slowly, feeling that stretch all along your right side. Try to keep your body straight and hold for 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Now return back to the centre. Lean your left hand over, feel that stretch all the way down to your left side, and hold for 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. So the next one is chest stretch. So open out both your arms to the side so that your chest sticks out a little and you can feel a nice stretch all the way across your chest. Just a little bit, like a long-lost friend coming towards you, you're going to give them a big hug. So keep your arms open, wide, feeling that stretch across your chest. Keep holding it there for 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Next up is trunk rotation. What we mean by trunk is your upper body. Stand or sit up, tall, straight back, place your hands on your hips and slowly look to your left. Feeling your upper body rotate, so bring the right shoulder in front and return gently to the centre. And then slowly look to your right, bringing the left shoulder in front, feeling your upper body rotate. Again, we're going to do a few more times. Nice and slowly. Great work. If you're standing, remember to keep your knees soft. And the final stretch, hugging a tree. Just hold your arms out in front of you, just like you're hugging a tree, directly in front of you. Your arms from nice circle in front of you, and then cup your hands, putting one hand in front of the other, and push your hands together, feeling that nice stretch across the shoulders and arms. Hold for 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Now sit up or stand up and return to that nice relaxed posture we had at the beginning. Brilliant! So that's the end of the stretching session. I hope you feel loose and revitalized. Just to finish off, shake it out. Just shake those arms and hands and legs and feet. Great work, everyone. Doing 10 today, just 3 times a week, can have great health benefits. It's fun and you'll simply feel better. So do keep going. Thanks for listening.
After all that exercise, you might feel like tippling a jar, like Mick Jagger does in this next song, Country Honk. Bleed album signalled a major change for the Stones, as the original founder of the band, Brian Jones, hardly featured on it, He was soon fired from the band and died in his own swimming pool before the album was even released. His replacement, Mick Taylor, plays on a few of the tracks, but most of the rhythm and lead guitar parts, and some of the bass parts too, were composed and played by Keith Richards. Quite a tour de force from a somewhat underrated guitar player. Now, David, with events in history.
Hello, I'm David, and here are some events that took place during this week in the past. October the 26th in 1977, a hospital cook in Somalia was diagnosed with smallpox. This was the last naturally occurring case of the disease, which is the only disease ever to have been completely eradicated after a global campaign of inoculation from 1967 to 1979. Smallpox was originally recorded from ancient India, China and Egypt over 3,000 years ago. It spread to Africa and Europe, where it became established when the Crusades encouraged population growth and mobility. Successive exploration and colonisation by Europeans then spread the disease to other nations. By the 16th century, smallpox had become the predominant cause of death throughout much of the world, outbreaks often killing as many as one in three people. Accounts of inoculation against smallpox in China can be found as early as the late 10th century. Inoculation became standard practice in Asian and African medicine, and even in places like the Shetland Islands, but involved serious risks, until English physician Edward Jenner discovered the first safe vaccine in 1796. Less than 200 years later, the disease would be declared completely wiped out. On October the 27th in 2022, South African-born businessman Elon Musk acquired the social network Twitter. A year later, he rebranded the company with its new name consisting of the single letter X. Twitter is one of the world's largest social media platforms where users can share short text messages, known as tweets, as well as images and videos. After its launch in 2006, Twitter grew quickly, with many million tweets being sent daily. But in 2020, it was estimated that some 15% of all accounts, approximately 48 million of them, were run by internet bots rather than humans. The platform has faced significant controversy since being bought by Musk, including accusations of an increase in misinformation, hate speech, and anti-Semitism. On October the 28th in 1971, the UK launched the Prospero satellite from Woomera, South Australia, as a technology demonstration platform, testing new equipment and materials for future British communications satellites. Prospero was carried on a British-made Black Arrow rocket, making the UK only the sixth nation to place a satellite into orbit using a domestically developed carrier rocket. Unfortunately, the Black Arrow's final stage also entered orbit, but rather too enthusiastically, as it continued to thrust after separation and collided with Prospero, detaching one of the satellite's four radio antennae. Prospero's tape recorders stopped working in 1973, and the satellite was officially deactivated in 1996, but radio transmissions from Prospero could still be heard, and it has been turned on in past years on its anniversary. It is in a low Earth orbit and is not expected to decay until about 2070, almost 100 years after its launch. At the nearest point of its orbit around Earth, Prospero can be seen through binoculars. On October the 29th in 2018, 75% of the city of Venice was flooded after violent storms battered Italy for three consecutive days. The city's St. Mark's Square and the adjacent St. Mark's Basilica were inundated, with the basilica's baptistry totally flooded and its mosaic floors covered by almost 3 feet of water. Venice floods frequently due to sinking land, rising sea levels and other factors, but this event was particularly severe. It was only the second time this century that the basilica had been flooded, and just the fifth time that there had been such high water within the body of the cathedral in the structure's 1,000-year history. According to the church's chief administrator, the basilica had aged 20 years in just one day, and it was becoming even more difficult to repair the damage, especially in an age of climate change. On October the 30th, Derby Day 1965, at Flemington Racecourse in Melbourne, Australia, saw a pivotal moment in women's fashion. Jean Shrimpton, known as the Shrimp, and then the world's highest paid model, wore a white mini dress that had a hem 4 inches above the knee. Despite the fact that London designers, especially Mary Quant, had promoted the style the year before, conservative Australia was shocked. Radio stations and newspapers published editorials for and against the outfit, which scandalised the nation and caused a global sensation. The controversy quickly spread to Britain, where the press angrily defended Shrimpton. The brevity of the dress came about simply because Shrimpton's dressmaker, Colin Rolfe, had not been supplied with enough fabric to complete their intended design. But others quickly imitated the dress, and by 1966, anyone with hemlines below the knee looked very old hat, and the iconic style would come to define the decade. October the 31st, in 1828, an Irish woman named Margaret Doherty was murdered in Edinburgh. Her killers, William Burke and William Hare, were exposed when Margaret's body was discovered in a trunk in Hare's lodging house, leading to their arrest. At that time, Edinburgh was a leading European centre of anatomical study, but the demand for cadavers for dissection led to a shortfall in legal supply, as Scottish law allowed only the corpses of prisoners, suicide victims, foundlings or orphans to be used for medical research. The shortage of corpses led to an increase in body snatching by what were known as resurrection men. Burke and Hare had originally sold the body of a deceased lodger to the anatomist Robert Knox for £7.10. A little over 2 months later, they murdered another lodger and again sold the body to Knox. The men went on to commit another 15 murders over a period of about 10 months, each time selling the corpse. After their arrest, Hare agreed to give evidence against his partner in return for immunity from prosecution. Burke was tried, convicted, and hanged. Ironically, as someone who died in prison, his corpse was also sent for dissection, and his skeleton displayed at the Anatomical Museum of Edinburgh Medical School, where, as of 2025, it remains. On November the 1st in 2018, Palau became the first country in the world to ban sunscreen. Palau consists of around 500 small islands in the Pacific Ocean, east of the Philippines. Tourism is an essential part of the economy and focuses on scuba diving and snorkeling in the island's rich marine environment, including its barrier reefs. Some sunscreens contain reef-toxic chemicals, such as oxybenzone and octinoxate, which destroy corals by a process known as bleaching. The ban, which became effective on January the 1st in 2020, prohibits the sale, import and manufacture of products with these chemicals. Visitors bringing banned sunscreens into the country may face fines of up to $1,000 and confiscation. Sunscreens devoid of harmful chemicals are allowed. And that concludes my bringing to you events from the news in this week in the past.
Hello, this is Sue. And here are some famous people who had their birthdays this week. On the 26th of October in 1942, the British actor and film director Bob Hoskins was born in Bury St Edmunds. He grew up in London and struggled in school due to dyslexia. He left school at 15 with a single O-level and worked as a porter, lorry driver and a window cleaner. His acting career began in 1968 while waiting in the bar at a London theatre for an actor friend. Hoskins found himself being auditioned for a play after being handed a script and told, "You're next." His audition was successful and his actor friend became his understudy. Many roles on stage, screen and television followed, with his breakthrough role in Dennis Potter's Pennies from Heaven. Other key roles were in the films The Long Good Friday, Mona Lisa, Hook, Mermaids, and the animation live-action mix of Who Framed Roger Rabbit. Hoskins won no less than 19 acting awards and was nominated for a further 15. He died of Parkinson's disease, aged only 71. On the 27th of October, in 1934, identical twins David and Frederick Barclay were born. They became billionaire property, media and retail tycoons, but their beginnings were humble. After leaving school at 16, they set up as painters and decorators, ran a newsagent's and then an estate agent's, with a sideline in doing up old boarding houses into hotels. They were clearly very astute businessmen, and throughout the 1960s and 70s, the brothers built up stakes in businesses such as casinos and breweries and bought a shipping company, the proceeds of which allowed them to buy the Ritz in 1995. They bought the Littlewoods Company in 2002 and turned it into a home shopping company. They own Yodel, the delivery company, and bought the Telegraph Newspaper Company in 2004, which has just been resold after some difficult years trying to get editors to do what they were told. The brothers have been dogged by accusations of fraud and tax avoidance, but investigations appear to have highlighted legal loopholes that the brothers exploited rather than nefarious goings-on. The family own a small island off Sark in the Channel Islands, which they seem to have treated as their kingdom, building an imposing castle and going to the European Court of Human Rights to overturn ancient feudal laws which did not fit in with their plans. They also withdrew investments in Sark after local voters refused to back candidates chosen by the brothers. It all sounds like a TV blockbuster reminiscent of Dallas or Dynasty, but in real life. On the 28th of October in 1927, the English singer and actress Cleo Lane was born. She grew up in Southall, London, and attended singing and dancing lessons from an early age. Her working life involved being an apprentice hairdresser, a hat trimmer, a librarian, and working in a pawnbroker's shop. When she was 24, she joined the jazz composer Johnny Dankworth's group as a singer, and they were married a few years later. She also pursued acting on the stage and had success with both careers. She became predominantly known for her music in the 1970s, releasing 6 successful albums and touring worldwide, making many appearances at the renowned Carnegie Hall. She made many television appearances too, including Singing with the Muppets, which must have been a highlight. Cleo Lane continued performing in the UK until 2018 and received many awards, including several honorary doctorates, a Grammy, a Jazz Lifetime Achievement Award, and a Damehood. She and her husband founded the Stables Theatre near Milton Keynes, which some of you may be familiar with, as it is still a great music venue. Lane died only a few months ago at the grand old age of 97. On the 29th of October in 1938, the Liberian politician Ellen Johnson Sirleaf was born. She was the first elected female head of state in Africa, but her life started out very differently. She was married at 17 and quickly had 2 children, so her life was as a homemaker. The family travelled to America, where Sirleaf was able to study economics and public policy. And when the family returned to Liberia, she was appointed Assistant Minister of Finance. In 1980, there was a military coup, and the current president was assassinated, and the rest of the cabinet ordered to be executed, so Sirleaf fled the country. She worked in the US and Nairobi in high-level banking positions before being appointed as a director of the UN Development Programme for Africa, where she gained a reputation as Africa's Iron Lady due to her political prowess. Liberia went through two civil wars and several very undemocratic elections before Sirleaf succeeded in becoming the leader of her country. As her country's leader, she was able to significantly reduce the national debt, make education free and compulsory for young children, and usher in a Freedom of Information Act, the first of its kind in West Africa. Sirleaf was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize in recognition of her efforts to bring women into the peacekeeping process, and has received numerous other awards for her leadership. On the 30th of October in 1857, the French neurologist Georges de la Tourette was born. He studied medicine and then worked for a prominent neurologist studying psychotherapy, hysteria, and hypnosis, all groundbreaking areas at the time. He described many different neurological conditions relating to disorders of movement, but he is mostly known for his identification and description of Tourette's syndrome, as a specific condition characterized by tics, both verbal and physical, and an inability to control them. At the age of 36, Tourette was shot by one of his former patients, who claimed she was acting under hypnosis. Although he recovered and continued working, his own mental health declined, and he was diagnosed with syphilis and died aged 47 with advanced dementia. Tourette syndrome was once regarded as a rare and bizarre disorder, and can appear so in its extreme form. However, research has shown that it is relatively common, with an estimated 1% of schoolchildren and adolescents having symptoms of Tourette's. On the 31st of October in 1795, the English poet John Keats was born in London. He'd lost both of his parents by the time he was 14 and was raised by his grandmother. He became a medical student and reportedly had great aptitude, but the workload took away time and energy from his writing, which was his chief passion. He began to have his poems published in literary reviews, aged 21, and had a volume published in the same year. Keats was a contemporary of Shelley, Coleridge, Wordsworth and Byron, in an era of romantic poetry, and his passion was so great that he decided to give up his medical career to focus on writing, though it meant struggling financially. By the age of 24, Keats was showing signs of tuberculosis, a disease which had claimed many of his family members. There was no treatment for TB at that time, apart from advice to go somewhere warmer. So Keats travelled to Rome, where he died aged only 25, and in the belief that he was unsuccessful as a poet. However, in the years after his death, his reputation grew steadily, and he is now regarded as one of England's greatest poets, often expressing extreme emotion through natural imagery. On the 1st of November in 1962, the swimmer Sharon Davis was born in Plymouth. She joined the Plymouth Royal Swimming Association aged only 8 and was coached by her father. She set a record swimming for the British national team aged 11, and was only 13 when she represented Great Britain at the 1976 Olympics. She started winning medals in international competitions aged only 14. By the time she was 18, she decided to have a break from swimming and focus on her television profile and a career in modelling, but she returned 9 years later and went back to international competition, winning more medals in the Commonwealth Games in 1990. Davies has an impressive collection of medals and titles to her name, and some may even be upgraded after revelations about doping used by her East German competitors. Her experience of competing against athletes who had been put on testosterone to enhance their performance has made Davies speak out about trans women athletes. She argues that their natural levels of testosterone growing up as males mean even after surgery their bodies are different, and this gives them an unfair advantage when competing against normal women. Davies advocates for trans athletes to have their own category of competition. Davies has gone on to have a busy television career as a commentator and also as a gladiator, with the nickname Amazon. She was awarded an MBE in 1993 for her services to swimming.
Now, if Keith Richards got to play almost all the guitar parts on this album, he also got to sing one of the songs for the first time on a Stones record. One suspects he wrote this song too. You Got the Silver.
Hey, babe, what's in your eyes? I saw them flashing like airplane lights. You fill my cup, babe, that's for sure. Must come back for a little more. You got my heart, you got my soul, you got the silver, you got the gold, you got the diamonds from the mine. Well, that's all right. It'll buy some time.
Clive Davis from the Wildlife Sound Recording Society. In 2013, I went on a sound recording trip to Mongolia, a country that I never thought I'd visit. Mongolia is 6 times the size of the UK, has a population of 3.5 million people, with many areas that have no human noise. It is a dream for a sound recordist. We had a local guide and camped in remote areas. Mongolia is on the East Asian Flyway, the migration route between Siberia and Asia, with plenty of birds that I had never heard or seen. We camped in several locations, and at one campsite, the skylark song was intense.
Thank you.
In a woodland ride, I left my recorder out overnight. You can hear the following birds, and I think I've got the order right. Firstly, a Eurasian woodcock, a Japanese quail, swinhoe snipe, and there's a common cuckoo in the background, and also a distant dog and horse. At a nearby lake, the common and white-winged terns caused consternation with the fish, and demoiselle cranes displayed in the distance. At the nest site of a black woodpecker, the juveniles call to their parents.
From the Hearts Life Archive, here's an article about the monks of St. Albans. Creating one of the greatest libraries in the medieval world, the monks of St. Albans Abbey were chroniclers of the age. A new exhibition brings their precious works back to the city. Close your eyes for a moment and imagine yourself in 13th century St. Albans. The Benedictine monastery here is the most important in England, with 9 cells ranging from nearby Redbourne to distant Northumbria. It manages 2 nunneries at Sopwell and St. Mary de Pray, and its great stables have space for 300 horses, their visiting owners ranging from humble tradesmen to royalty. Tucked away inside the scriptorium, a medieval monk is painstakingly working on his chronicle, an account not just of local and monastic life, but of events far beyond the confines of the town. A talented teller of tales, he is also no mean artist. So what do you expect to see? Pictures of biblical figures, for sure. Perhaps some local people and places too. But an elephant? Welcome to the world of Matthew Paris, monk, chronicler, and friend to the movers and shakers of the age. Which is why this medieval celebrity was one of just a few people privileged to have seen the royal elephant. And now, 800 years later, visitors to St. Albans can see the illustration that Paris drew of the huge beast gifted to Henry III by the King of France for his menagerie at the Tower of London. Paris even sketched in the keeper for scale. This extraordinary image is one of many gems on show at St. Albans Museum and Gallery until the end of October as part of Chroniclers of History, the Medieval Monks of St. Albans and Their Books. Almost all the manuscripts on display were produced in the scriptorium of St. Albans Abbey between the 13th and 15th centuries, but have been scattered in libraries and institutions across the country for centuries. Now, for a few weeks only, they are on loan from the National Archives and the British Library, the Bodleian Libraries in Oxford and the Parker Library in Cambridge, and admission is free. The survival of these precious books and documents is in itself something of a miracle. Many were lost during the dissolution of the monasteries under Henry VIII, although, ironically, several ended up in his own collection. An exhibition of manuscripts may not sound particularly enthralling, elephant or no, but the information panels displayed beside them brings this turbulent period of history vividly to life. And many of the books are beautifully illustrated, coloured and gilded, windows on a remarkable time. The monks of St. Albans were creating, copying, and preserving historic, scientific, and philosophical texts that helped to define their world, says David Thorold, curator at Verulamium Museum and curator of the exhibition. At a time when writing was unusual and books were rare, Matthew Paris, Thomas Walsingham, Richard Wallingford, and their fellow scribes preserved a record not just of the medieval world, but also its mindset. Without them, our knowledge of our own history would be significantly poorer. Normally, only professional researchers are able to see these books close up. So the opportunity to see them together now, beautifully presented in one room in the city in which they were created, is a once-in-a-lifetime treat. St. Albans possessed one of the great libraries of the medieval world, adds Professor James Clark of the University of Exeter, consultant to the exhibition and author of the exhibition catalogue. This exhibition brings some of its books back together for the first time since 1539. And not just books. Among significant documents on display is the deed of surrender of St. Albans Abbey from December the 5th, 1539. Handed over to King Henry's commissioners, it is just 18 lines long, written in Latin, on parchment, and sealed in red wax. The first chronicler to be identified at St. Albans Abbey was Roger of Wendover, who died in 1236, his job passing to his trainee, Matthew Paris. Everyone wanted to be immortalised in his lively and wide-reaching chronicles, even though Paris took no prisoners and you could never be sure what he would write about you. Through the exhibition, visitors can enjoy some of Paris's original work, and thanks to large-scale projections, facsimile pages from his Life of St. Alban, in all their graphic detail. Not for the squeamish is the illustration of St. Alban's executioner, whose eyes supposedly fell out as he struck the fatal blow. As you work your way around the room, you meet John of Wheathampstead, who resigned as abbot after 20 years, only to be persuaded back into office during the Wars of the Roses. It's a humbling experience to gaze on the only surviving copy of his History of England. Then there's Christina of Margate, a young nun endowed with a priory at Margate. The illuminated St. Alban's Psalter was made in the Abbey Scriptorium during the 1130s, and images of the lavish illustrations that inspired Christina can be enjoyed via an interactive screen. The medieval chroniclers on display here describe visitors and benefactors, reveal the extent of medieval scientific knowledge, and include national events that were to inspire writers like Shakespeare. Each one is unique, but viewed together, they underline the importance of St. Alban's Monastery, not just in contemporary medieval life, but also in our own understanding of those who went before. And illustrations in this article include Matthew Paris's picture of the royal elephant, which is very large, and there's a lovely illuminated picture of King Offa and his gift of the monastery of St. Albans from the Book of Benefactors. One assumes this is King Offa, famous for Offa's Dyke. We're nearing the end of this week's programme. It just remains for me to thank our contributors, Hilary, Lucy, Caroline, Penny, Dan and Rob, for reading the news, the Hearts Advertiser and St. Albans Times for providing it. Thanks to Gilly and Angela for the radio listings, our friends at Wharfdale Talking News for the audio-described TV listings, TNF Soundings for 10 Today, and Clive Davis of the Wildlife Sound Recording Society for bringing us the sounds of Mongolia. David read the events in history, and Sue presented famous birthdays. Thanks too to Liz and Richard for copying and distributing the USB drives. Steve will be here next week with News Extra, but that's all from me in October 2025. We close with a little more music from the Rolling Stones. You can't always get what you want. Don't forget to let us know about music you'd like to hear, and we'll do our best to play it for you. Goodbye.
abuse. Singing words gonna vent our frustration. If we don't, we're gonna blow a 50-amp fuse. Sing it to me.
You can't always get what you want.
Just fight, fight.
You get what you need.
Oh, baby, yeah. Oh. I went down to the Chelsea drugstore to get your prescription filled. I was standing in line with Mr. Jimmy. Ill. We decided that we would have a soda. My favorite flavor, cherry red. I sung my song to Mr. Jimmy. Yeah, and he said one word to me, and that was there. I said to him,
you can't always get what you want.
Just might find
you get what you need.
Oh yeah. Woo! Time.